Mark, now this, of course, is an Air Force trainer or an Army trainer. When did they first design this airplane?
They were in the late or mid 30s when they when they started designing. I think it was like a B. I forgot exactly what the designation of the North American designation, right. but they built a version of this that actually had fixed gear that they built before they came up with the AT-6, and so it was a progression. They didn't just come out and say, all right, well, here's the T-6 like you see it. It was, it developed. It actually was an airplane a lot more like a BT-13 when they first came. Had a smaller engine, had fixed gear. But then they, were trying to improve it, and so they put the bigger power plant, and they put the retractable landing gear on it, and so the original one they didn't really build it as a trainer. They thought they would be able to sell it as a ground attack, but that didn't sell. So they came back and said, all right, but it would make a great trainer, and so that's where the AT-6 came from.
And it was an advanced trainer.
It was
for
an
the
advanced trainer.
Guys.
Yeah, all the designations. You started off in the primary trainers, the Stearman's, the PT-17s, PT-13s, the Fairchild's, PT-19s. They had a lot of PTs, and then the cadet. Then once they graduated the primary training. Then they would then, and that's where they would first solo was in the primary training. Well, then they'd go one more step. They'd go to BT, basic training, and it was a little more advanced, but it still had fixed gear, but it had a variable pitch propeller. It had flaps. And then they would also start doing a lot more formation training and other combat type maneuvering. But then once they graduated the basic trainer, then they moved to the advanced trainer. And this is where you actually learn how to fight. And so they would drop bombs. They had machine guns. These had, most of them had one machine gun in the right wing, and they also had a machine gun in the nose. And so for the cadet would fly it and do gunnery training with it. They also used them for gunnery training. They'd put a gunner in the back seat. A T-6 making noise, right?
Yeah, they're good.
But they would put a gunner in the back. They had a fold-down rear canopy, and they actually did gunnery training in them as well. So they did a lot more than just pilot training. But that was it. Was primary purpose was for pilot training. Well, anyway, once you graduated advanced training, then you got your wings, and then you got moved on to fighters.
Now, what engine do you have in here?
This is a Pratt & Whitney. It's an R1340. It's rated at 600 horsepower at sea level. And now this engine, obviously, is a 30s design. But they built that same engine way up through the 60s. And, of course, the engine later on was used for a lot of aerial applicator applications, AGCATs, and that kind of stuff. And so it's a very, very reliable power plant. It's one of the most reliable power plants that Pratt & Whitney ever built.
All right, now this, you're flying a G model, is that correct?
That's what I have is a G.
Tell us about the G model, what the difference is between the G.
Well, what they ended up doing, the earlier models, the hydraulic system was different because they actually had what we call a power push, which was a valve that you actually pushed down, which gave it hydraulic pressure, and then you could put the gear up and the gear down, flaps up, flaps down. When they came out with the G model, they actually had a mechanism that had a cam that basically when you either moved the flaps or moved the landing gear, it automatically pressed that power push valve, and so it just did away with that power push lever. They also, most of the later ones, they all incorporated what we call a P51 tail wheel. Now that was a mod that they went back and put in a bunch of the earlier models, but the G's all came out with the P51 tail wheel. And what that meant was that the tail wheel would steer on the ground as long as the lock mechanism was engaged, but when you push the stick all the way to the forward extreme, it pulled the lock pin out and it would full swivel. And of course that was the same mechanism. It's actually some of the same parts that's in a P-51, so that's why they call it a P-51 tail wheel.
Then I understand that when they developed the P-51, they actually used some of the parts.
They did.
Off of the
Well,
T6.
The lock mechanism on the tail wheel steering is so robust that it worked well on the Mustang as well.
All right. Now, this was also post-war. It was used as a primary trainer. As a matter of fact, as I only had 20 hours of flying time when I got into this airplane. This airplane, even though I flew the 747, is still the biggest airplane I've ever flown.
What they ended up doing was in the late 40s, especially in the early 50s, what they did away with all the primary and basic. You just went out. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys. Their very first airplane ever to fly in their life, because they went through into the military, yeah, was an AT-6. And they said it was very daunting to climb in that thing the very first time and never been in an airplane.
Well, you know, that was my era, too, because I had never been in an airplane, and I got 20 hours in a cub and got into this thing, and it was huge for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Going from a cub to this, I mean, it's got to be from like sitting in a Cherokee and getting in a 747, right, to be the complexity of it.
Well, tell us a little bit about flying it. I mean, just basic flying is that you would imagine as far as a trainer was concerned, because you had plenty of time.
Well, one thing that this airplane did, it made a good trainer, is it's not that easy to fly in the sense, now in the air, it's a dream. It's very light on the controls. The controls, especially in pitch, you don't really have to trim it very much. You do have to use a little rudder, but there is a rudder trim. But the problem is when you try to take off and land, obviously being conventional gear, the landing gear are forward of the CG, and so, you know, every time if you swerve the airplane, the center of gravity is trying to push you outside the turn, it's trying to ground loop. And the gear is fairly narrow and it sits up high and it ground loops very easy and it does it very quickly if you're not on your toes. And so what happens, it makes you be very diligent with your feet. Matter of fact, I tell people that I'm instructing, I say, if you're not moving, when you touch the ground, if you're not moving your feet, you're wrecking. Because if you don't keep moving your rudder pedals the whole time, this airplane will try to swap ends on you.
Well, do you instruct in this some too?
Well, not in this air. I have another one.
Yeah, all right.
I have another one.
I don't mean that airplane.
Yeah, but I have another airplane that people come out and I'll instruct. Or if somebody buys a T6, and I'll go fly with them. Because a lot of insurance companies require you to have either a CFL sign off or 25 hours or 10 hours, depending on how much experience they have. And so Steve and several other guys on the team have been recognized by the insurance company. If we sign off that they're good to go, then they don't ask any questions. The insurance is good.
You do that with some of the guys that are upgrading the Mustangs and whatever.
Yeah, I do.
Because that's required also.
Well, you know, the thing is, like, for example, if you're flying, like, you want to get type rated in a TBM, for example. Matter of fact, Brad Deckard came down when he first bought the airplane wanting to get typed. Well, there's not really any dual-control TBM, so he came down. And Alan and I actually gave him some dual instruction. Great student. And so he came down, flew the airplane pretty easy. He had a lot of helicopter experience, so he knew how to use his feet.
Right.
And then, of course, and the reason why he had to come to us is because we were typed in a TBM. And that's kind of the way the rules are. The flight instructor has to be rated in the airplane before they can recommend him. And so he came to us. We gave him the instruction. And then Vern Jost actually worked with him and got him his type rating. So, and we've done a few of those like that. And so same thing like with if you want to get a P-51 type rating, then it's the same thing. You actually, because most Mustangs are single control, and so you come and you actually, the applicable trainer is the AT-6, so you train them, typically put them in the back seat, make sure, you know, that they can operate the airplane from the back seat, because it's, if you can fly the airplane from the back seat, because the visibility is not very good, you're flying the airplane not just on what you see, but also on what you feel. And once you've developed those two skills, and that's what right, you need to have to fly the fighter.
How about the role of this in Korea and a little bit in Vietnam?
Well, they didn't go to Vietnam, but they did go to Korea. Now, this particular airplane was actually sold to the French government, and it was used in the exact same way that the Mosquito squadrons used them during Korea as artillery spotters. Mm-hmm. This one had rockets that were mounted under the wing, and what they would do is they would fly around until they saw the enemy, and then they would shoot the rockets, and then that gave something for the artillery to home in on.
But no guns.
No, they had guns on them.
They had
guns in the wing and guns in the nose. Now, some of them, they could actually put gun pods under them instead of the rockets. But typically, they either had one or the other. But this airplane saw action in North Africa during the French-Algerian War. And it's got a bunch of bullet holes in it.
Really?
That have been patched, of course. And And so whoever did a nice job.
Yeah. Well, I understand that over 60 countries use this. And well, for one, I guess South Africa was the last
one. They were the last one. I think they retired theirs 92, 93 time frame, something where along in there. And
there were some that were used, or actually, I think the Israelis used it for ground support for something.
Well, like I said, the most of the G models were... a lot of them were trainers, but there was a lot of them that were used in that artillery spotter role, and they made a, you know, the thing is, you want, don't, for an artillery spotter, you don't want something that's super fast, because if you just fly over the enemy, you don't see them. But a T-6 is very maneuverable. You can circle. It's got good visibility. Of course, when you're moving slow and you stay over the target, you get shot at, and that's hence why they get a lot of bullet holes. But it made a really good artillery spotter, and so they made quite a few of those over the years.
Well, I really appreciate you bringing your airplane here.
Yes, sir.
It's nice talking to you.
All right, glad to do it.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thanks.